That's what has happened to this session, and that's why the sign out there says canceled.
Oh, I didn't.
But it's hard to read, and so and I'm here willing to, you know.
Yeah, well,
so think about. Sort of.
She can give good stuff.
Think about your own ward situation, because the title of this session is Ward Stories. We're not talking about religious theological dispensations here. We're talking about frontline tales of the modern Mormon community. So think about those things and plan to come and tell us about how you have seen. And she had. Well, stay, because you'll hear some from them. So what I was about to say is, if you have no memories, I'm sorry for that. This is not, and there are no hall monitors making people come in either. That's all right. I've lived in wards for a long time, and so I'm sure I could talk for 45 minutes if I needed to. But the important thing is that other people share experiences as well. All right. We are a couple of minutes. Don't forget I'm stealing your watch. We're a little bit. Do you need something?
Just want to make sure you talk close to the microphone so we can hear you through the recording.
All right. You tell me if you can hear this. All right. We're on then. All right. Welcome to the Sunstone Symposium 2000, being held here in the Marriott Hotel, downtown Salt Lake City. I'm Carol Quist. I'm office manager and assistant editor at Sunstone Magazine. Probably the best job I ever had, except being a spouse and a parent. And a rock. This is session number 154. This is Thursday, August the 3rd. The title of our session is Ward Stories, Frontline Tales of the Modern Mormon Community. It's supposed to be a panel, of which I am the moderator. This has now become a one-woman show, except that the woman is going to call on other members for their own experiences in the front line of a Mormon ward, or experiences that you have heard of from family members or neighbors or friends. I'm going to begin with a very current frontline story that has occurred in my own ward. There are some other things from other times in my life that, if we have time, I would be delighted to discuss, because I think they have shaped my idea of what people can do for people, regardless of being assigned as a visiting teacher or a Sunday school teacher or any other sort of calling that we may have. The frontline story that fascinated me when I found it out is of an organization called Kolob Construction. You know where Kolob comes from. This is actually a group of people who mobilized when there was an emergency is always fast, but a serious situation where a person needed a home. The person in our ward had a home which had to be sold, and she needed to move into another space. She has, I think, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, I'm not sure about that, and severe complications of that disease. There was no money. So there was no time, and there was no money. But there were people who cared about this person who, in our ward years before, had spent her own stint on the front line as Relief Society president and cared for a lot of people in that respect. So Kolob Construction came into being, totally volunteer organization that did not even stay within our ward, as it turned out. It was sort of instigated by the our Relief Society president, but actually by her companion. Two women who own a home together heard about the situation and said, all right, we're going to do something about this. What do we need? We have 2 weeks. We have a condo unit. which is sick, needs everything. The carpet has to go, has to be repainted, has to have new cabinets, has to have new appliances, has to have the electrical and the plumbing reviewed and brought up to date, and everything has to be done in this space of time. 2 weeks and no money. Someone with almost no resources. So, people went to work. People, instead of going to their daily work, came over to the condo. The new resident had permission to get into it 2 weeks before closing and to let people work in it. And this is what they did. They ripped out the carpets. They ripped down the paneling. They ripped out the linoleum. They replumbed. They took cabinets out. They rebuilt them so that they could fit in a different kind of a space. They set the dishwasher 3 times because of situations changing. So we had people doing new sheetrock, new painting, new carpentry, new tile, new carpets, all of this, people working 12 and 16 hours a day, some people, of course, going to their regular job and then coming over. It spread, as I said, to people beyond our own ward, people from neighboring areas who came in and did the sanding and the painting and all of the things that needed to be done to this piece of property. When employers of some of our workers heard about this, they donated the tile, the salaries of some of their employees to fix the cabinets, the carpeting, the labor of doing some of these trades, the paint, and all of the sort of things that went in, or sent a very small bill, a ridiculously small bill. The day before the move was to happen, the two sisters in our ward who were the spear carriers. That's a wonderful image, isn't it, to think of two women carrying the spears finally. Anyway, brought... All right, let's say who were the pivot people. That's football, isn't it? Well, anyway, who were the instigators of the whole project? Brought the tenant over, the new owner over, and then everyone cried. Everyone who was there, who had worked on it, who was going to move into it. It's a beautiful place, just a wonderful, wonderful place, made for someone who needed it, who could not do it herself, who did not have resources of time or physical skill or money. There was a little problem, though. Now Kolob Construction was out of business, and they were fired up, and they had people offering to do more things that hadn't been involved in the original project. What can we do? What can we do? We want to do more. We want to do more because it was wonderful. They loved it. No one had asked them to do it or called them to do it or assigned them to do it. Luckily, this is the place I'm pausing for you to laugh, a home burned in our ward. See, I knew somebody would at least laugh. A home nearly burned, not all of it, but very severely burned. And regrettably, Kolob, who wanted to go in and do the work to help out this family, wasn't allowed to because of insurance concerns. But at the end of what the insurance work did, they went in and did some cleanup and some washing and laundering and putting things back in cabinets and touch-up painting and this sort of thing. So Kolob had a little bit of work to do. But people kept wanting to do more things. And my husband had a heart attack over this period and had some surgery and couldn't fix the fence in that we needed to fix in our backyard. So Kolob Construction, you know. Kolob is dormant at the moment. But if you know of any projects, I can tell you how to contact these people. All you have to do is call me at Sunstone, because they are willing to work and they're willing to hire more workers for the same pay as the original workers received. So that is my current frontline story of ward members in action in a situation that needs to happen. Now, you're probably all familiar with what's called various things, but I understand it as the central city kinds of projects, where people are called on missions and go to people who need certain help. You can get your income tax work guided through. You can get retaining walls rebuilt, and various kinds of projects are handled for people in a certain part of Salt Lake City, the boundaries of which I don't know exactly. Is there someone else who would like to tell a frontline story, or do you just want to come and sit here and be entertained by me? Who has a story of ward members in action? People just doing something for somebody. We have all taken loaves of bread and casseroles. This is not quite the same concept as co-op construction. If we took them every day for 3 months, yes, probably it might. But who is our next speaker? Is there a next speaker? Twist. All right. This speaker will continue. When I was a child, there was a situation in our ward where a relative of someone in our ward who owned a farm in a nearby Salt Lake community and had some severe, sudden medical situations that occurred and could not harvest. And it was potatoes and it was onions. And people in our ward thought, we can do this. And all we had to do was go and harvest and sort. I was probably about 10 when this occurred. And even though my father owned a ranch, I really had not done what you would call farming. As a child living through the Second World War, I had been one of those who planted victory gardens, but I was old enough to be dumb enough to dig in with a stick every now and then to see whether the seeds were growing. So this is the total amount of farming and gardening experience that I had. Have you ever tried to sort according to small, medium, and large? Well, this was a very interesting exercise. Our whole family went, our neighbors went, as many people in the ward that could go went, and we sorted the onions by small, medium, and large. Now, probably today, maybe even then, there are screens or some kind of equipment that you drop the onion through, and if it goes through, it's small, and if it doesn't go through, try it in the medium slot. I don't know. So we spent 2 days, a Friday and a Saturday, sorting onions for someone who was very happy, and the other people dug the potatoes. I did not do that. Did this need to be done? Yes, it needed to be done. Could the visiting teacher do it? No, the visiting teacher could not do it all. Another frontline story concerns a way that we raised money when I lived in New Jersey. In those days, we could still have bazaars and other types of fundraising events. A lot of people would rather write a check than go and spend Saturday sorting onions or whatever it might be. And probably now that we are so pressed with time in our lives, we would all rather write checks for flood rehabilitation or whatever situation has occurred. But this was an opportunity to make money for the ward budget. One of our neighbors was an employee at, I don't know what, I'm not going to say the name of the company. Let's just say the name of a company that makes light bulbs. And that's what it is. And they were doing a price increase. And so what needed to happen was that all of this stock, and this is something that you all knew, that when prices go up on something, all of the stock in the warehouse gets the raised price, not just the new stuff which is being manufactured. At least maybe you have suspected that the old stock gets all of its prices raised, not just the new stock. At any rate, this was an opportunity for our ward members to take the packages of light bulbs, open them, take off the old sleeves, that's the very rickety, weak type of paper that they put around light bulbs so that when you drop them, they're certain to break and you have to buy. You know that corrugated stuff, I mean. Probably the most fragile things in our lives, like eggs and light bulbs, are packed in the most fragile containers. Maybe that's to make us careful with them. I don't know. So that was our assignment, was we took out the larger boxes of light bulbs, opened the smaller boxes of light bulbs, took all that packaging off, took off individual sleeves, put new sleeves on, put new packaging over the four light bulbs together, and then repacked them. How they did this was bring trailers, semi-trailers I'm talking about, into the church parking lot on the weekend. And actually, this could go on during the week. So we could do it on Sunday. Never on Sunday. We could do this on Saturday, and then it would be locked up, and we would come back for a Monday family home evening and do it. This was an opportunity for families, you see. Children probably under the age of 10, no. But children under the age of 10 are quite able to run around on the grounds and, have their own fun and pick grapes from the neighbors next door, which they did, and that sort of thing. The neighbor was grateful. The neighbor was very happy to have any church members come and pick the grapes. I would take my children to primary, and I would go and pick grapes, and we'd do grape juice when we got home. Anyway, so on this occasion, we would get a big truckload, and we would get an empty semi. And so we would bring these and we would do the light bulbs. This is the most interesting, fun, one of the two most interesting fundraising things that I have done as a church member in my life. A, we got money for it. B, it took no skill, really. I mean, anybody can take packages open and put things in and close the packages up. People of many abilities could do it. There was an age limit, as I mentioned. And so we would empty the one truck full of light bulbs and gradually fill up the other trailer, actually, full of light bulbs. And then the electrical company would come and haul it away and bring us another one. This went on for a summer and was an absolutely fascinating project. The interesting thing to me, too, is that nobody got tired of it. I don't know why. I guess it was because we had a lot of fun working together and we knew we were making money. But we made money in the best way that I know of as a Latter-day Saint or whatever church I might have belonged to. And that was to get it from the non-members. My favorite fundraising thing is not to soak the members. Make a cake, take it to the bazaar, buy your own cake back. No, I don't like those kind of projects. Well, yeah, I've done those kind of projects. But this is the best kind of project that I know of. Do it for somebody else who pays you. Do I have any volunteers for another frontline story? The Mormon Ward Working Community. Do you have a story? You come up here and...
I don't know if it's a story, but I certainly participated in some fundraising things.
Come up and tell us about building fundraising things. And the rest of you be thinking about other stories about frontline communities. I have some more, but I know my stories. I would love to hear your stories. Go ahead. This is Carol Beckstead, right?
Right.
Who'll be speaking to us.
I was a member of El Sereno Ward, and we had numerous fundraising projects. One was making sauerkraut. And that was really an interesting thing. I couldn't eat sauerkraut for years, but... Here?
A little closer.
There was this huge vat of cabbage, and they would put the kids down in this pit, and they would toss cabbages up on the conveying belt. This would carry it down to these, it was something that would grind the core out. I don't know what to call it. And the adults would grind the core out and throw it onto the conveying belt, and then it would go through a chopping machine and chop the cabbage up, and then it would be dumped in this large vat. My brother, being older and more mature, his job was to put on these big hip boots, and they'd put salt in there, and he'd run around and tromp it down in circles, and they would, each one put in so much time. So anyway, we got quite a bit of money from other people making sauerkraut. We also had a project where we made the little diaphragm that said, "I want my mommy." to put in talking dolls. And we had to glue all the little parts together. Let me think. Oh, we had another one where we worked for a pickle factory. And we had to chop the ends off these little tiny onions to be pickled. Howard Hunter was our bishop at the time, and he and Joe Ryder, who was another member of the ward, worked on a machine. And the idea was that they would pour these in, and the machine would chop off the two ends, and we were just going to make a lot of money. And the night that they brought the machine down, they dumped all the onions in, and the only thing that came out were the two ends. At any rate, that, and the machine was never revised, but we had an awful lot of fun. Offhand, those are the only ones that I can remember. I'm sure there probably were more, but...
I sort of think that our modern families have no clue about what we did to raise money, we, in the, quote, olden days, because now you just write checks, and maybe writing checks is... what we can do right now, and we're just a different kind of pioneer. I don't know. She talked about her building fund raising, and it reminds me of my second of the two favorite fundraising projects, which I also did while living in New Jersey. It needs a little bit of background. My husband's work was such that he made friends with a radio pioneer, Jack Popley. In the station, call letters may come to me. At the moment, I can't think of them. He had been instrumental in 1924, I think it was, in handling radio signals which resulted in saving a dirigible called the Shenandoah, which in a storm had broken loose from a mooring at Lakehurst, New Jersey, and was drifting who knew where, and how would we rescue these crew members and get them back to the hangar. This is only part of the story, because this is only background for the story. The difficulty with the dirigible was the radio was disassembled and some parts were back on the earth. And so it had no communication. And how Mr. Popley saved it was from his radio station having people call in who sighted it as it was drifting around New Jersey, and then he would relay information about where it was and contact ground people who burned fires or whatever they did to try to direct it back. But at any rate, he was in a long time, he was a radio pioneer and a long time radio station, WOR in New Jersey. They had connections with an advertising agency at the time my husband became acquainted with them. He became acquainted with them because they had to move some of their towers because the New Jersey Turnpike was being widened. And so, you know, you adjust railroads and other things when that happens. They had an advertising agency connection that needed a lot of testing of various projects, products, and wanted to get consumer opinion. Now, many of you have gone to malls where, as you're hurrying out with your purchases, somebody stops and says, "You're a person between the ages of 45 and 45 and a half. I need your opinions on whatever it is." They have these questionnaires they want you to fill out. This was more interesting because we would go to the radio station and we would test products and we would write out answers to questionnaires. It's very interesting to me to see how much that sort of a project interested my neighbors, non-members, and church members as well. I was able to enlist a lot of women and men, mainly women because it was a daytime job, in my neighborhood who would drive their own vehicles down to the station and spend a couple of hours, and we were paid. And my neighbors and friends did it as just a fun thing to do, and so we got their money too. Among the products that we tested were chewing gum and gave our evaluations, cereals of several kinds, commercials we listened to and gave opinions on what was interesting about the commercials and what we thought was not good, and suggestions for length or focus on the commercials. Some kinds of drinks that they were thinking of marketing. I keep thinking that one of them had been cran apple, But I think Cran Apple is new enough that it possibly was not one of those combinations. This went on for about 6 months and was a very highly profitable fundraising thing for our ward, but it also gave people opportunities in my neighborhood to meet some of my friends and vice versa who were church friends, which was very interesting to them because the minute we moved there, we had instant friends because of the church. This was not something that was familiar to these neighbors, that you could just move in and all of a sudden you had people who would tend your kids van unloaded on Sunday. Someday maybe somebody will write a book about why that is the best thing about the gospel. I don't know. But for parents on moving day, that is a wonderful thing about the gospel. Again, I'm asked if anyone else has a frontline story that you would like to tell about living and acting in a Mormon ward. Good. We're going to hear next from Geraldine Woodward.
Hoosiers have always beaten their own Mormon drums, and we aren't in tune with anyone else. So, we moved back there 33 years ago. And their biggest money-making project was having a fair booth. We served coffee on Sundays at the fair booth. And it was a wonderful way to introduce the gospel to non-members. And we kept this up probably 5 or 10 years until someone became a little more astute and didn't think it was very appropriate. We also worked every year at Oktoberfest. Have any of you been to a good German drinking Oktoberfest? And we had no qualms about selling tiger ears, which is a pulled Indian dough. And we made thousands of dollars, I think like $10,000 every year on just pulling those tiger ears. And this sounds so irreligious, but it really happened. I was asked to be chairman one year, and they gave me a new convert. And during the Oktoberfest, during our preparation, he got drunk and hot-wired all of the wiring into our booth. And, of course, it was very illegal and very dangerous, but they didn't realize this until they tore down. But he was a good man. I think these have helped me to become very accepting of people. Also, for this fair booth, we sold chicken noodle soup, and we had a member who worked at Pfizer's, and so this was in their animal production unit, and so he got 100 chickens that we had to kill, pluck, and cook. And I don't think health departments now would ever allow this to happen, but we made aprons for the men about the chicken picking crew, and they really had a great time doing this. And so it was really a very productive project. We also cut asparagus, which is a very labor-intense, and we decided we were making 5 cents an hour doing that. And these others were much more profitable.
Do we have another frontline story that someone has thought about? Good. Come on up. This is a wonderful time to share memories of bruises and bunions and one thing and another. We're going to hear from Michael Lofgren.
Well, I have a couple. The first one I'd like to tell goes back to when I was 7 years old, and we were building our new steakhouse about a block from my home. At that time, I raised the money, an extensive amount of money. I can remember, this may be 50 years ago, and my sister and I made breadboards that we sold at ward bazaars. And these breadboards, we would, I don't know how the fellow was getting us the basswood, but we would trace a picture onto the basswood and then get a wood burner and burn the lines in, then watercolor it, then varnish it. They were breadboards that were not designed to ever have anything cut on them. And I don't know what happened to the one that my mom bought so that it wouldn't get destroyed. I can remember where it was stored, in under the arm of the cupboard. But we not only got to do those things with the bazaar, we got to work on the chapel. When I was 7 or 8 years old, there was a wing that was on the chapel wing of the steakhouse. And the steakhouse in Idaho Falls was almost a full block long. that I got to get up on the roof and shingle when I was 8 years old. And they were using cedar shingles, and I just had a lot of supervision, you know. And we loved the place. We played there and messed around, and we knew the building inside and out because we'd gotten to work on it. 21 years ago, this month, the neighbor that lives just up the lane from us, who had five children, young children, was out motorcycle riding, and he'd worn his goggles to do welding, and they were all scarred up. And he got on his motorcycle, and he put his goggles up on his forehead. And he got a bit of grit in his eye and crashed his motorcycle way out in the middle of nowhere. As before, we had helicopters to come and pick us up and stuff. And they took him to the hospital. Well, they took him to where he could get a land ambulance in the back of a pickup. And they put a halo on him when they got him to the hospital, one of these frames that braces your head off your shoulders and prevents your neck from being further damaged. And he is technically a paraplegic, but he's so close to being a quad that it's hard to imagine. My neighbor and I, with the help of a lot of ward members and a lot of the businesses out in West Valley, managed to make his... We added on to his home an extensive addition and made the whole home wheelchair accessible with a wheelchair shower and all those kind of things. And we see those kind of things still happening in our ward. We have a woman who's gotten MS, and her house was remodeled by the ward at no cost. A great deal of that was under the supervision of my wife's father. We have another woman that was in an abusive relationship and moved away from town to get away from her husband, but the house was nearly destroyed, and the ward has, within the last 3 or 4 months, gone in and remodeled the house so that it was fit to be sold, so that she could get some money. And I wanted one other story. I wanted to read you one out of my book. This is my book called Trudy Smiles Back. This is the only story in it that actually mentions the church directly, but all the stories are about this woman named Trudy. And this would be on a lighter note. Saran wrap. Trudy answered the door wearing only Saran wrap and a red bow. She seldom surprised Martin, her husband, who took in everything behind his slow grin, but this outfit might fan his flame. The children were spending their night with Grandma, and over the days preceding their departure, Trudy timed Martin's arrival so she could open the door before his key even entered the lock. There's some saying about the best laid plans, but Trudy ignored it. When she pulled the door open quickly, Martin was not there on the porch, looking at her with wide eyes and his slow smile. The Relief Society president and her counselors beheld Trudy in her special apparel. "Oh, hi," said Trudy. "I try to surprise Martin once in a while. You'd be amazed what fun." The women stood there on Trudy's porch with their eyes wide. "Would you not tell about this, please?" Trudy watched them. They didn't know where to put their eyes. "Just a sec, I'll get a robe. Come on in." "We won't tell, but it'll be hard not to." Those three women were true to their word, but came to Trudy a few times for advice. All three bore a child before a year passed. They named them Trudy, Trudy Ann, and Martin. Trudy attended the blessings of all three, a godmother of sorts. Thank you.
Wonderful. Do we have any other volunteers? Think about it. You may have some stories to tell. Years ago, my husband was hired by a company that sent us to Saudi Arabia. He is an attorney and a civil engineer, and the company George A. Fuller Construction Company, was a division of Northrop. You have all heard of Northrop because you have flown in things that they make. And their contract through the U.S. government was to enlarge three air bases from which the most recent Gulf War that you have heard of was fought. And so there we went as a family to Saudi Arabia. The recruiter who wanted to hire Bill to do this brought slides and pictures and all kinds of stuff to our home to show to our children, figuring that these photos of the lovely Arabian Gulf and the rec center with its pool and tennis courts and snack bar and so on would sell our children on moving there, and it did. We went there with four children between roughly the ages of 9 and 14, which is old enough to carry their own luggage and change the money from country to country. So we went to Saudi Arabia. That is a Muslim country. The only people who go there are hired by companies, as we were, to work there. And many people are not on family status, but we were. And we also had APO privileges. So we were not military, but we had APO privileges. Those of you who do not know what this means is you can buy tires and have them flown in like a letter is flown in. Or I'm saying that because I know that ridiculous stuff it was bought. I saw it. And flown in. The most we had flown in was a typewriter. No, some people had shovels and whatnot. That is not the most, actually, that we had flown in, because about a week after we arrived there, the branch president said to me, asked me, "Carol, do you have a temple recommend?" And I was stupid. I said, "Yes," instead of saying, "What temple are you?" No, I mean, I knew what was coming. I knew exactly what was going to happen, that I would be called as Relief Society president. Now, I told you this was a Muslim country, and that means that any other religious groups meet quietly, secretly. You go there, you don't want home teachers, you just tell. You don't want home teachers because they won't come, because if the people complain to the police, the religious police, you're on the next plane out and it doesn't matter where it's going. So many people who know me think, she was a Relief Society president, how funny. She's just not the type. She doesn't do canning or bread or casseroles or any of that kind of thing. There are probably many reasons I was called. I think it was inspiration for a lot of reasons. I had children who could care for themselves, and I worked for, my husband worked for a company which provided us many privileges. The APO mail, the rec center, the commissary to buy meat, the dining hall, private cars, and a bus system, and this sort of thing. I was called to be a Relief Society president to groups of women who had no privileges and different privileges. Very difficult assignment. And I have talked about this in Sunstone before. So I'm not going to give any other details, except to say we did visiting teaching when our husbands drove us, or we walked, and we went alone. Sometimes the people who lived at the University of Petroleum Minerals visited each other. The people who were Northrop-related people, like I was, visited each other, often by bus and crazy taxi. The people who lived on the American Arabian compound, the Aramco oil, visited each other. They could drive on the compound. None of the rest of us women could drive. The Aramco people had some privileges we did not have. While they had international, they had to rely on international mail. They had a wonderful commissary, and besides being able to drive, and medical facilities right there in country. So I was a Relief Society president, also to people whose company provided nothing, and who, as young mothers, for example, had very difficult situations to live under. I found myself sending notes with my children to the American consulate. And they would give them to the teachers who were LDS, who lived at Aramco, or lived at the University of Petroleum and Minerals, or were Bechtel, so that we could get information out to our sisters who were all over, and also, of course, my husband had to drive me. He was really the third counselor in the Relief Society president in some respects. One of the parts of the inspiration for my call was the APO mail, because in this way the church could ship manuals to this Muslim country without any kinds of reprisals or confiscations or any other difficulties. In fact, one day I was in the mail room and the clerk looked up, and just as he looked up and spoke to me, I noticed a box had broken on the floor of the mail room, and I saw Mary Miss handbooks and some other little things. And he was saying, "Is this for you?" And I said, "Oh, look, the scout stuff came. I'm so sorry. Let me help you clean this up." I don't know if he thought it was scout. Hey, because there were troops on the consulate there, and I just didn't want him to get into trouble with this religious stuff coming in, and I certainly didn't want to be in any trouble. The actual frontline story that I want to tell you about in this situation is something that you may not have thought would occur to anyone or would be part of anyone's life. We had a sister in one of these locations who, it was discovered by her visiting teachers, who were the only people who could be her visiting teachers because of where they lived, that she actually did not know how to run a house and care for children. All of us think, as women, probably men, that we grow up knowing this because we see it happening. She did not know how to clean. She did not know how to prepare food in the best clean way and to store food. And I am talking about very, very basic stuff, worse than when you come into my house and think that the Board of Health is going to deliver a second notice any day. There was a need there. Now, this particular sister had a wonderful talent. She could grow things. She could get seeds, and she could make them grow in this desert. And Arabia, by the way, you may think is all sand. Not true. It is also rock and dust. None of these are really conducive to growing anything very luxurious. But that was her skill, and she was wonderful. And I got her to come to Relief Society to teach us how to do this. There, and they taught her how to scrub and clean and mend. I know nobody mends anymore. You just throw the socks away and buy new and whatever. But I'm talking the elementary kinds of things. They taught her housekeeping and child care. She had three little children. I didn't know about it even until they told me the progress they were making. They didn't need to tell me, did they? Because they were handling a need that they saw. What could I do for her? I couldn't drive there and help her do anything. So this was very, very pleasing to me, because I saw Christian behavior towards somebody. It was all on the quiet. Nobody else ever knew about it but me. I didn't tell my counselors. They didn't live there. And, you know, I had a counselor here and a counselor somewhere else to try to handle all of that branch. And I have always thought everyone should see that example of how to fill a need that was there. And no big deal, no big calling or anything was made of it. I have 3 o'clock. I still have another couple of things I want to say, but there's still a chance for some of you to speak if you wish. Also in Arabia, because of having haves and have-nots, there was a lot of opportunity for people to feel better than other people or to feel worse. We had military besides having Northrop-type personnel, as we were. And they had their certain quality situations, and many of them, and from other companies, were single status. That is, they had no families with them. And one of the fun things that as Relief Society president that I got to do was be a hostess. And I would have the Filipinos show up at my house maybe 7 o'clock on a Sunday evening with crab and with squid. They'd been out fishing in the Gulf, and they wanted to cook it. And they were single status. They lived in bunks somewhere, and they didn't have any way to cook it. And they came in and took over the kitchen and taught us all how to eat crab. I still think I could starve to death before I could learn to pick crab well enough to keep body alive. But they could do it marvelously. My children love this. This was the most wonderful thing for them to get to know people of other locations as another person, just part of the branch of living there. Also, we had a sister who lived for a company that had, whose husband worked for a company who had no benefits and privileges, who had a special dietary problem, and her company was supposed to have handled this, but something had gone awry. So we ended up being able to get these items. This is not black market I'm telling you about, but it must be borderline, I don't know. We ended up being able to get these items from the sisters who lived on Aramco, from their commissary. They had it. Our commissary did not have it. And then it was transmitted to somebody else who transported it to me. And then I walked it to her because I didn't have any other way of getting to her. This is somebody caring for somebody else. I don't care what company it is or whatever it is. Maybe the best thing about living in Saudi Arabia was for our whole family. I think that my husband and I were very cosmopolitan and knew all about the world by then because we had lived lots of places. But for our children, to learn where the promised land is and to learn that because something is different, it's not worse. And it's not better. You may think that not having street signs is worse. It isn't easy to tell people how to get there by turning at the corner that has a pile of brick and going down two more streets and turning where there's a hole with a big pile of sand. Because, of course, in a couple of weeks, those aren't going to be there. But it taught us a lot about being different is not worse and being different is not better. Do we have another volunteer to tell a ward story? I have zillions of them. But I don't want to impede anybody else telling some frontline stories. Another thing that was very educational for my children occurred in Montclair, New Jersey. I guess I thought I grew up in the make it, use it up, wear it out, make it do, do without. And of course I did. Was born at the end of the Depression, and I lived through the Second World War, and there is no use lying to anyone about my age, because as my teenage son told me, you're born, and every minute you get older, or you croak. And so, there's nothing to fake about it. And certainly, I am a privileged person in many, many ways, with my birth and my family, and I have always said I was far better off than Nephi, because I was born of goodly parents and family, and none of my brothers ever tried to kill me. And I had six. But the other thing that I think was very educational for my sons, as I say, I had this background of, you know, being careful and frugal and so on, and I'm sure I transmitted it to them. There was no doubt about it. One of our ward funding projects was to go and cater the luncheon for the Montclair, New Jersey Women's Club. This had been going on for many years before we moved there. And they made a lot of money doing it. And the Montclair women loved us because nobody came there and smoked or drank in between. And, you know, smelled up the kitchen or got a little tipsy or anything like that. And we were clean and neat and we had great menus and good service and all of that sort of thing. One time in preparation for making chicken croquettes or some dumb thing that makes you do a lot of work with picking chicken, we began doing in our ward, our own ward kitchen. And I had no other way to help except to bring my children with me. And so we were working on this and picked a certain amount of white meat or dark meat or whatever color it was that they wanted. Could we have been prejudiced in those days and only chosen one color of chicken? I don't know. Maybe we were. Anyway, the large chicken body and some other bones were just shoved aside in the sink and ignored. And in fact, someone was about to throw them away at the end of the project when my son said, "You're not going to throw those away, can you? We can take that home and use it." And we did. And my children were quite surprised that there were people who just didn't think, you know, that was worth going home and putting it in a pot and boiling it and taking the bones out and putting noodles with it and having soup or something. I don't know if they still feel that way, but I thought that's a pretty good way to feel, not to be so easy to waste food. That particular year, I went over to help them serve, and as a little bonus, I got the cupcakes, which were left over. And I put them in a box and put them on the top of my station wagon and went to go pick up my children. And I think four of the cupcakes made it all the way home, but I left cupcakes spread across Upper Montclair for some distance, no doubt. A very recent story about Mormons on the front line occurred in my brother's family at the time of the Los Alamos fire. Actually, my brother lives in the Jemez Mountains. Yeah, they built a cabin and they moved there. They had sold their Los Alamos home, and as he was retired from the lab, the Los Alamos Scientific Lab, and just doing some consulting as much as he would let them hire him to do, and so they had decided they just wanted to live in the mountains and sell their Los Alamos home, which they did. Then their children moved all over the U.S., and they decided to buy a home in Albuquerque because it was near an airport, and they had a child in New York and a child in Florida and a child in San Diego and one in the Northwest. It was very timely because a few months later, the fire happened in Los Alamos. You would have all done this same thing that they did. You would have all done this very same thing. They had a home in Albuquerque, and they had 16 people, refugees from Los Alamos, sleeping and living in their Albuquerque home. They got them evacuated somehow from Albuquerque, and my brother, who is part of the Mountaineer Fire Volunteer Department and Rescue or something up there in the Jemez Mountains, was out on the fire lines and helping to watch out for hot spots or whatever it is you do when you're on the fire lines. One family is still living there in my brother's house in Albuquerque. Their home in Los Alamos was not destroyed by fire, but their friend's home was. So their friends are living and working in Los Alamos in the people's home, and the people are living in Albuquerque in my brother's home. Well, this is no big deal. We all, you know, would have done something like that, and we all may have done something like that. Does anyone wish to tell any more ward stories? Do any of you know fascinating fundraising projects? I'm going to tell you about one that I never heard about, telling Wendy East. It will only take me two sentences, and then we'll finish and let the next session come in. It was making shoe polish. Anybody else ever did this? It was back in New Jersey. New Jersey was a gold mine of fascinating projects. And Saturdays, the guys would go and make shoe polish. I never got to go. The women never got to go. And about 6 months later, they discontinued it. You know, the welfare system has changed its ways of getting its materials. And so I don't know why that happened. I promised to quit, but I just remembered one other fascinating thing. Because of mentioning to you that the church welfare system has changed its organization and ways of producing commodities and handling them, we had the opportunity of visiting the church ranch in Orlando, Florida. My cousin's husband's uncle was the superintendent, whatever it is. They have several units. It's as big as Salt Lake Valley and Utah Valley combined. When Disney World was built, the church ranch people were clearing the ranch of palm trees, and they donated the palm trees to Disney World. So at that time, all the palm trees were Mormon there in Disney World. Fascinating place to visit because they have a citrus unit, they have a cattle unit, they have several other kinds of things that they grow in this church ranch, and it still, even after all these years, is in existence and producing commodities, and the people drive around with a gun in the pickup and watch out for poachers. But anyway, I thought you would like to know about the Mormon palm trees at Disney World. Whether they have had children and have kept them in the faith or anything like that, I don't know. I appreciate your participation and help in this session, and I hope you have enjoyed it. See you somewhere else.